good friends. Welcome. Sorry about that. A little bit halting start to the program today, but I assure you that is only going to be, that's the only part of the show that's going to be halting whatsoever. Good afternoon, friends. My name's Tom Kiley. It's a little bit after 4 p.m. Central Time, and that means it's now time here for INN World Report Radio on GCN 4 till 5 p.m. on Central Time, Monday through Friday. And good afternoon. Welcome to the program. We have a great show lined up for you today. There's a little bit of news that we're going to talk about first, and then we're going to be rejoined in about 10 minutes or so by a very exciting guest that we had on a lot earlier in the year, but we've asked her to come back and talk with us about how things are going in Iceland. I got Scotland on my mind for reasons I will share with you in just a moment, but in any case, Birgitta Jonsdottir is a member of the Icelandic Parliament. It's called the Althingi. Althingi, I guess, is how they pronounce it in Iceland. And Birgitta is a musician, I believe, and she's a poetess and an artist in Iceland. And for those of you who are familiar, Iceland was just crushed by a banking scam. All right, the neocons came to town and convinced everybody to do away with all of the prudent banking laws that had protected banking in Iceland for so long. And once the doors were open, the wolves moved in and caused just an incredible mess. It was kind of, I think it was kind of like a Ponzi scheme, it seems to me. And there was all kinds of shady dealings going on. It looks like people were buying and selling shares back and forth with each other and so forth. And it just made a very, very big mess, caused a big crash in Iceland as part of the world banking crisis that we've been through in the last couple of years. And it really angered a lot of Icelanders. There's only about 350,000 or so of them there in their country, the size of about Kentucky. And especially when the Brits and the Dutch leaned on Iceland to make good on the savings of their citizens. A lot of people in England and in the Netherlands, put their money into these Icelandic savings accounts over the internet. A lot of other countries were a lot smarter than that, where they had their local regulators regulating the ability of their citizens to do that. But the Netherlands and England didn't, and they just let their people go straight through. And so the scamsters ended up running off with some money, and when the financial collapse happened, it was just a big disaster. Well, the British government and the Dutch government apparently were so embarrassed that they paid their own citizens back the money that they lost, because they should have been watching the store. They weren't. And then they made a deal with the Icelandic parliament to go ahead and be reimbursed by Iceland at a tremendous rate of interest. And the people got very angry and stood up and said, no, we don't want to do this. And the president of Iceland actually vetoed the legislation that came through the Icelandic parliament. Now, as I understand it, maybe it's only happened once before, or maybe even never before, but Birgitta can tell us when she comes on. So in any case, now it's a situation where it goes back to the citizens of Iceland for a referendum. So that's very, very interesting. And as part of all the anger that happened there, people like Birgitta, activists, were swept into office. So here we have a citizen activist who's now a member of the parliament. So it's a very, very exciting time in Iceland. The people standing up to the banksters. And one of the more interesting ideas that they have going on there in Iceland is that, something we should be saying, my friends, we should be looking and pointing fingers to, of all places, the corporate media. And we should be asking them, how could things get so rotten without you warning us about it? Who is minding the store? Okay? The politicians are corrupt. They're not watching the store. They've hollowed out all of the legislation. The banksters, they're certainly not going to tell us. They're just making money hand over fist. Where is the financial press? Where is the world press? Where is the Guardians, the Fourth Estate, okay? Instead of having these creeps coming on TV yelling at you, buy, 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 when it's the worst thing you can do, okay, how come they weren't reporting on all of this? Well, they analyzed the situation in Iceland and determined that there were too many regulations that harmed whistleblowing reporters. So there's an initiative in Iceland now. It's very exciting that they are going to they're proposing they change the laws so that they can let people come to Iceland and publish their information from anywhere in the world. And they'll have very, very strong laws to protect them. For instance, there's something like 29 sealed gag orders in Britain on journalists. Gag orders on journalists that they are not allowed to report on something, and that they are not allowed to tell anybody that they're not allowed to report on something. And I agree with Birgitta and some of her colleagues in the Icelandic parliament that this is a very, very unhealthy state of affairs. So we're going to have her on to talk with her about that and, you know, what they intend to do about changing it. And it sounds like a very exciting time over there. You know, when you're in the middle of a revolution, it's a very exciting thing when you have the opportunity to try to change things and put them to get things started in a new way. Another story, friends, that I think is very, very interesting and we should be watching is apparently in the Herald Scotsman, a Scottish newspaper, there was a story yesterday. I'm sorry, day before yesterday, I think, on Sunday, about how apparently the U.S. is shipping a great deal of bunker buster bombs from California to the British island of Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean in preparation for a possible attack on Iran. Okay, it's a British island. There's something like 50 Brits there, but there's something like 300 and something U.S. personnel, or maybe more. I have to check the story here. But there's a lot more U.S. personnel there. The U.S. has a deal with Britain that they can transship through there and they can use it as a base and so forth. And the story says that these are going into Diego Garcia to be pre-positioned. It looks very, very similar to what was happening before the Gulf War, with munitions being shipped to that part of the world. So this is a real this really gets me upset. You know, the idea that no matter what anybody says, they still are fantasizing about having a war with Iran. It's just insane. So to talk about that, tomorrow we're going to have Ambassador Edward Peck join us on the program. Former ambassador, I believe, to Iraq, by the way. So we're going to have him come on and talk about that. So that's what we have lined up for you. Meanwhile, as I was telling you yesterday, Hank Albarelli's book, A Terrible Mistake, continues to just rocket around the world. He's getting interview requests from all over the world, and people want to make a documentary out of it and so forth. So I'll tell you more about that in the coming days. Anyway, this is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio. We're going to be right back with Birgitta Jonsdottir from the Icelandic Parliament right after this.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio, 5 days a week, right here on the great GCN radio network, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. And that's 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time is just what it says, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. However, you know, we did have the daylight savings time shift in some parts of the country. In Arizona, I don't think they do it. And we're thinking maybe that has affected the way we have our interview set up for today, because we're having a problem getting through to our guest who's in Iceland. So I'm not sure what their system is actually now. So we're going to continue to try to get through to her. But if we don't, We won't, and that's okay, because we've got some of the most interesting and intelligent listeners on all of radio, if you ask me. And I don't just mean that in a joking way, although I probably kind of sort of do that too. But no, I really appreciate you listeners out there that listen to our program, and we try to present information that you're not necessarily getting every place else. And we try to be a little bit different than some of the other shows on the network. You know, everyone has their place and so forth. So in that sense, we appreciate you listening, and therefore we're going to open the phone lines up. All right, so it's 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. It's a toll-free call, and I ask you to call, and let's talk about whatever's on your mind. Let's talk about the show. What would you like to see more of on the show, maybe? For instance, this is your opportunity to give me some feedback. I'd love to hear from you on that. And I can send books out as well. So if people give me a ring, I'm happy to do that, to send some books out to the callers. So give me a call. Open phones, 866-582-9933. Whatever's on your mind, any topic at all. And, a couple of things. I see that the there is a backlash now to the co-opted Tea Party movement. It's called the Coffee Party movement, and that's very interesting. There's a tie-in to coffee, by the way, with the American Revolution. When they dumped tea, when the British king was putting these taxes on tea, King George, on the tea from the British East India Company, which he owned a substantial stake in the company, in protest, people began to find other drinks, hot drinks to use, and they were bootlegging a lot of tea from Holland and places like that into the country. And they were also using natural substitutes like chamomile and mint and so forth. And I'm told that people decided, let's drink coffee. So that's when coffee first got started in these United States in a bigger way than it already had. That's what I'm told. And plus it had the stimulant effect that tea had as well. So now with, the Tea Party movement, we've talked about it on this program a great deal. It seems to me the problem with the Tea Party movement was that it was too transpartisan. All right, you had people from all different political stripes in there, particularly with the ones that came in through the 9/11 Truth Movement. And then you had people coming in there that supported Ron Paul, libertarians. But they were focusing on issues about government that couldn't be used to divide a lot of people, as is typically the case, A against B, and the winner is the elite C. And so I think they then became targeted, and, we have to get things back to normal again. So it's very interesting to see how the Tea Party movement is there's a co-opting move that's being attempted by the National Republicans. And I think they don't like the idea that it is too transpartisan and that too many people are getting along in there. So they want to get it back to an anti-Obama thing, which, of course, makes it a quite partisan movement. And, a lot of the items on the agenda, even still to this day, that survive with the Tea Party movement were items that people were very unhappy with George Bush about. Okay, but they seem to be focusing more on the personality of Barack Obama. And so I think that because it was getting a little too transpartisan, they had to get in there and try to steer it back to the game that they always win at. Okay, they always win at this, I can't talk to you because you're a liberal, and you can't talk to me because, I'm a conservative and so forth. I think it's a shame that if they're successful, but shame on us if they are. It's our own fault. And as I'm told, that this coffee party movement now is trying to come back. Now let's see if it becomes just another partisan event on the other side. That would be very unfortunate. I know that I'm talking with some people about it. I'm actually sort of partners with somebody, in a very small partner in a coffee shop in Brooklyn, and I put some news articles to them saying that there's this coffee movement, and they're meeting in coffee houses. They're meeting to talk in coffee houses and stuff. So that's a nascent movement, if you will, something to keep our eyes on and report. Anyway, what do you think? You can give me a call toll free, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. What do you think of this report in the Herald Scotland? about bunker busters being shipped to Diego Garcia, being prepositioned, purportedly for use against Iran. Iran, how do you feel about Iran developing a nuclear capability? Okay, not just for power, but also if they take it further for military purposes. Iran gets a lot of hard currency from its oil reserves, and as I understand it, as such, they would rather sell the oil than use it themselves to power the country. So they are very interested in developing a nuclear power capability in Iran. And I think there's a lot of countries that are very interested in helping them do so, because as you probably know, it's a very expensive proposition. And so the technology usually comes in from outside. So it's been a legitimate goal of Iran to get nuclear power going in their country so that they can use less oil themselves and sell it on the international market, particularly when the prices are so high right now, and get currency from it. That actually, friends, goes way back to before the Second World War, in between the two wars. The British were in Iran, and Iran was not colonized like places like Iraq were after the First World War, or like Britain had done with India, for instance. It maintained its own form of government in Iran, and this was a king called the Shah. And what happened instead was the Shah's government sold off concessions to foreign companies to have a monopoly. In the case of the British, it was with the oil, and with the Russians, I believe it was the rail system. But we'll talk a little bit more about Iran and what's going on there just after these messages. Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INM World Report Radio. 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, right here on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. And I apologize, friends. It looks like we have a mix-up here again with our guest today. This is 2 days in a row. This doesn't look good. But I think it may have something to do with the fact that we changed our clocks in the Northeast United States, you too, in the Central Time Zone. You know, you got to watch out. Arizona doesn't do it, you know, so they got to be contrarians, I guess. But in any case, I'm suspecting maybe that that's what's causing a problem here. Our guest will be, and if she doesn't get to us today yet, you can be assured we will have her back on shortly. But Birgitta Jonsdottir from the Icelandic Parliament, the Althingi, and she was going to be coming on to talk about the Icelandic open media movement that they have going on there, where they're going to make it safe for people to publish their materials in Iceland without the fear of retribution and so forth. You know, there's something apparently called there's this tourist litigation or something like that, where you know, the laws in England for libel are very different than ours here in the United States. If you're a public figure, people can say certain things. You know, you can voice your opinion. You know, if I'm on the radio and I can say, well, I think it's this way or that way, it's a little bit different than saying that it is this way or that way. But apparently in England, the laws are much stricter and people can get sued. And what happens is that when people come to visit, they can get slapped with a lawsuit, you know, things like that. So I think these are the kinds of things that they intend to try to fix in Iceland. And, of course, it's kind of like in the United States, California is such a big state. When they pass a law about cars, for instance, it sort of becomes a de facto standard because they sell so many cars in California. They don't want to necessarily make two different kinds or something like that. So I think that that's what they have in mind in Iceland, but that's what I want to have Brigitte on to talk with us about. Meanwhile, the phone lines are open. You can call in 866-582-9933, and I'll call in, talk about whatever you'd like, and I'll be happy to send you out a copy of Dr. Mary's Monkey, the book by Ed Haslam about how these monkey viruses that could be affecting humans were accidentally being processed in the polio vaccines in the 50s, that 100 million or so doses were made. And it's Ed Haslam's contention that it's causing the cancer wave that we're seeing now from people that were inoculated with that. Anyway, what do you think? 866-582-9933. I was talking before the break, friends, about Iran, and I was going through some of the history with you. You know, we're at this point right now where Iran and the United States have been at loggerheads for ever since the Shah was kicked out once and for all in 1979, and you know, Ayatollah Khomeini took over. The history that goes back with Iran, it's a very interesting one. They have a lot of oil there. And the British recognized the usefulness of it, and they went into Iran. They didn't colonize Iran like Iraq had been done and so forth after the First World War. Instead, the control of Iran was achieved by foreign companies and foreign governments going in and getting concessions to have a monopolistic control over this resource or that service or something in the country. And as I understand it, I believe it was the Russians were operating in the northern part of the country, the British in the southern part of the country, and they own things like the rights to all the oil in Iran. And they were taking the oil out. They were supposed to give the Iranians a percentage. They were not giving them what they were supposed to be giving them. And the king, the Shah, was just paid off. He was looking for money to go to Monte Carlo with. So what did he care? You know, he could have been feeding his people with that money. He could have been doing a lot of things with it. But he got a pittance for the oil, the family jewels, if you will, of Iran. And in fact, worse than that, and by the way, what I'm telling you is outlined in just a great book by Stephen Kinzer. I think he wrote the book in 2003 or 2004 called All the Shah's Men. If you're interested in what it was that happened in Iran after the Second World War, wherein the country had formed a parliamentary democracy, okay, and it was taken from them by none other than these United States, by the CIA and these United States. This is information that I'm talking about right now, comes from that era and comes from that book, in fact. you can check it out. It's a great book. All the Shah's Men. It's out in paper book now. Stephen Kinzer, brilliant, brilliant author, New York Times journalist, has been all around the world many times on the program. In the meanwhile, while I'm telling you all this, if you want to call in, ask a question, make a comment, talk to me about the show, you're welcome to do so. 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933. Toll free. Give me a ring. In any case, back to Iran here, because I'm talking about Iran because it looks like this article in the Herald Scotland paper, it's talking about bunker busters being positioned on Diego Garcia for use in Iran, which is very, very unsettling if it's true. So in any case, the Brits were ripping off the Iranians like crazy. After the Second World War, the Iranian people leaned on the Shah and got the Shah to agree to hold elections for a parliament. Okay, and that's what happened. And they essentially made the Shah a figurehead, like supposedly like the Queen of England is supposed to be. And they had a democracy, a democratic parliament installed. The leader of the premier was a man named Mohammad Mossadegh, just a champion for not just Iran, if you ask me, but for many people around the world. Time magazine called him the man of the year. They called him the George Washington of Iran. And that was back, I believe, in 1951 when he first came to power. Well, when he got into power, he recognized that the Brits were just ripping the country off. When they had originally, with the previous corrupt monarchy run by the Shah, made the deal with the Iranians, they even paid off the Iranian negotiators to make the deal even worse. They corrupted. They paid off, I think, £10,000 apiece to several of the Iranian negotiators of the deal. And so the deal was even worse. So they were taking all this oil out of Iran at bargain basement prices, and they weren't even paying the Iranians the agreed amount that they said they would for the royalties and so forth. They wouldn't even show their books to the Iranians to let them see how much oil they were taking out. So after the Second World War, the Iranian people rose up. They got themselves a parliament. They elected the premier, Mohammad Mossadegh. And one of the first things he did was, look, we can use this money to help develop our country. So he went to the Brits and he said, look, we want to renegotiate this. You did this with an old king who's now out of power. It was a corrupt deal. We don't want to take it over. We just want to get a better deal with you. The Americans are going 50-50 with the Iraqis and so forth. So we want a better deal. Well, the Brits didn't want to have any of it. Didn't want to have any of it. And they were going to depose the parliament. They were going to invade. Harry Truman said you can't do it. We'll talk a little bit more about this right after the break.
America, you are being tested, but here's where we study for it. From 1/2 mile north of Ground Zero in New York City, you are listening to INN World Report Radio with Tom Kiley. Now, daily on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central. For 9 years, the alternative media activists at INN have produced national daily television news and information programming, top-of-the-hour radio news briefs, and INN World Report Radio.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio. A little bit of a mix-up here today, and I think, friends, it has something to do with the fact that perhaps we're going through this whole daylight savings time issue here in the Northeast, and where you are too, in the Central Time Zone, because our guest is in Iceland, and I think maybe we had her booked for a couple of weeks ago, and there may be some kind of a time confusion as a result of that. So I'm going to get back in touch with her. She's been on the program before, very, very interesting woman, Birgitta Jón's daughter. And, you know, talking about how they're standing up to the banksters in Iceland and also how they are, you know, dedicating themselves to making some laws now that actually protect people from journalists and whistleblowers. It's a big problem that people are afraid to speak out, and they can get gag orders and so forth. You know, there was a gag order for the longest time on Sibel Edmonds. Sibel Edmonds, the woman, I believe, of Turkish descent, who is a Turkish-American who was hired by the FBI after 9/11 because they just had such a backlog of stuff that needed to be translated. And she started finding real corruption in these transcripts and these tapes that she had to listen to. Tried reporting it to her bosses, and they told her to don't worry about it, you know, and they wouldn't take the information from her, and she made a complaint about it, and she ended up getting shoved out of the FBI. And then John Ashcroft, then Attorney General of the United States, put a gag order on her that she wasn't allowed to talk about the stuff that she had seen. And that's a tough one. You know, what do you do when the truth is out there and you know about some crimes and the government itself is trying to keep you from talking about it? Well, she's persevered, and she ended up going in front of the Congress, and she ended up starting to tell her story. And it's a harrowing story about Israeli and Turkish intelligence services infiltrating into the Congress of the United States, for instance, and corrupting people and getting people, blackmailing people and so forth. In any case, they seek to do something about that in Iceland, and they want to make it so that you can publish your information in Iceland without having to worry about that. That sort of thing. Very, very interesting. Birgitta Jón's daughter, we'll have her back on soon to talk about that. Anyhow, friends, the phone lines are open today. You can call me 866-582-9933. You're welcome to call, whatever's on your mind. I believe we've got Solomon on in Toronto. Solomon, how are you today?
Pat, how are you doing, Tom?
I'm good. Good to hear your voice, my friend. How are you today? And how's things up in Toronto? Are they starting to warm up a little bit yet?
Oh, yeah, we're warming up a little bit. Well, I'm sorry to hear that your guest from Iceland couldn't make it. I was looking forward to getting an update on what's going on there. I saw that they had got a resounding no vote on the referendum on the fraudulent extortion, trying to get them to pay for this bank fraud that had been committed there.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I wanted her to give us an update on.
Yeah, I was interested in hearing that. We'll see whether they can actually, where it's going to go from there, and whether or not they're actually going to be able to enforce this. Or, I mean, they're such a small country to be going up against the EU and so forth is still, it's a fairly risky and risky option. One of the reasons I called in here is I got a suggestion for a guest on your
sure.
show.
Go for it.
Have you ever heard of Cost Publishing, Helka Ferry? He's a publisher up here in Canada, and I was at a local health conference here a couple of days ago in Toronto, and I saw she's got a new book out on Lyme disease. And there's a lot of controversy surrounding Lyme disease, and there's even some suggestion, I don't know how accurate it is, but I'd be interested to learn more. There's some suggestion that it may actually be related to some military experimentation regarding to weaponization of, you know, biological weaponization of insects and so forth. So,
I mean, it's a nasty business, I'll tell you that. Do you have that up in Canada as well? Do people suffer from Lyme disease?
Oh, yeah. No, it's all over North America. Yeah, it's all over North America, the Lyme disease. But her website is kospublishing.com, so it's just kospublishing.com. That's all one word, kospublishing.com, kospublishing.com. And I'd be interested to hear what she has to say. I'm sure she'd be wanting to promote her.
Very good, very good. I'm going to look that up and see what we can talk with her about. Does she also talk about how to manage your own health and different things you can do for yourself too?
Yeah, well, she's got several books out there. I was just chatting with her briefly about her stand, and she's up on most of the alternative health information. She's got another book out there that she published. She's actually the publisher, not the author. She's a medical science writer as well, but she's running this publishing company. She's got another book. I think it's called Corrupt to the Core, and it has to do with the way they've corrupted the regulatory agencies here in Canada when it comes to health. There was a scandal here many years ago. I think it was in the 90s where some whistleblowers came out where they had, you know, corporate executives coming in here to Health Canada, which is like the FDA there in the States, and they were, you know, giving bribes and pressurizing people to make approvals on unsafe drugs and genetic modification and all this kind of thing.
Well, Solomon,
a situation in the States.
Solomon, while we're on the topic, it's not often that we get to ask Canadians, our brothers and sisters up there north of the border, but how satisfied are you with the healthcare system in Canada?
Well, it's a complicated issue. There's a lot of things to consider.
Well, then let me make it a little less complicated. How do you compare it to the kind of service that's available here
well,
in the United States?
Well, I think they have different levels of service in different states in the United States. I've also lived in the United States, and I think my experience has been better in Canada than in the United States. But when I was living in New Jersey, New York several years ago, they've got some kind of Medicaid there, what is it, charity care or something like that, and I was able to get some subsidy there for some health bills that I had. And now it's not cool to have to pay a doctor, you know, out of pocket just to get a prescription when you're paying the doctor more. When you already know what the prescription is that you want, you got to pay out of pocket just to get them to write you the prescription. That's no fun. But you know, there is, I don't know what it's like now. I don't know enough about what's going on with this new bill. It sounds horrible. I know in general it's easier access here, and I think there's, whenever you're able to socialize things like expenses on drugs and things like that, and generic drugs, I think there are some savings to the public overall.
Well, let me ask you something.
What I've heard.
What about your state of mind? I mean, you know, here in the States, you know, you're looking to switch jobs, and you may be in between for a while, and you got to start all over again, and you can lose your coverage, and then you may have to, you won't be able to convince somebody else, and who knows what the economy is going to do? Can you afford it? Can you not afford it? I don't get the sense that the people in Canada have that kind of an issue. Is that am I off the
mark? No, you're right. I think it's better overall, but. Like I said, I don't know enough about the system in the States to make it. My experience has been, you know, as a struggling artist living in the United States, I never had a lot of money to spend on insurance and all that. Anyways, I think I did have some insurance for a short time, and I utilized it. It helped me out. I didn't find it to be all that terrible.
Solomon, what kind of artwork do you do, or is it music?
Well, I don't anymore, but at the time I was doing illustration. I did illustration for major publications, New York Times, New York Press, things like that, just editorial. That sort of
wow,
thing.
I'd love to see some of your work. Why don't you stay on the line for a minute? I'll give you an email address if you'd like to send me some stuff. I owe you a book, by the way.
Yeah,
it is coming. Why don't you hang on to on the line for just a moment? All right, good friends. I apologize. We had a bit of a mix-up today with our guest, Brigitte Hjonsdottir, and that means John's daughter, by the way. That's the way they name themselves up in Iceland. It's very interesting. It's a small society, relatively. It's about the size of Kentucky, about 350,000 people or so. And you're named after your father or your mother as a daughter or son. Hjon's son or Hjon's daughter. So in any case, I'm sure we'll have her back on shortly. In the meanwhile, tomorrow, Ambassador Peck, Edward Peck, will be with us. He served as the ambassador, I believe, to Iraq, and we're going to have him on to talk about what's going on with these bunker busters heading to Iran.